what challenges did you face in hiring and retaining talent, Bradley?
As a control freak, it's hard to let go. You know, in your mind, you have the right answer, and it's so hard to be able to do that. I think the best thing I can say is surround yourself with good people, people that you trust. It's very hard to do, but you have to. In our business, in the real estate world, you know, we say all the time that, you know, they fly our flag, but they're independent contractors in the real estate side. But I think that's one of the benefits is you just surround yourself with great people, people that you trust. And especially in the business side of it, I think a big thing is get people to compliment you. I think a lot of times in the business world, we're like, I want that person just like me right beside me. You don't always need that. So you kind of need the yin to your yang to be able to balance you out in those moments. So I would support you. You know, one of the things that we do in our business, our Kentucky broker, Trisha, that's here today, she is really big in the DISC assessment. So for us, being able to figure out how do we utilize some of those psychological tools to be able to better support our business, because it's not just, you know, you can't have just a bunch of chiefs, and being able to balance out how we do that and do it in a productive way matters from a small business perspective, because especially as we're branching into new, you know, endeavors in Kentucky and things like that, you do have to be able to trust people because that's a big piece of being able to evolve and scale a business the right way.
Chris, I'll just repeat it, but how did you build a team capable of supporting your business as it grew, and what challenges did you face in hiring and retaining, or do you face currently?
Sure. Well, for any time, you got turnover. But so just a little bit of background, from 2018 to 2020, we doubled our size. So we went from 6 restaurants to about 300 employees to 800 with 13 restaurants. And of course, the foundation of that is how do you lead that amount of people? And it starts with you. If you haven't invested in your own leadership skills, have you sharpened your own straws? That's where you gotta start. 7 Habits of an Effective Leader is one of those great books that I was really able to understand. And then figuring out, there's this wonderful model called the DISC model. That'll tell you basically what is your leadership style? What is the way that you can, for example, I'm an influencer. I do it by influencing, showing up every day to day, but if you tell me to get in front and type up a memo, that's not me. But there's some people who are organizers like that. And when you're building your team, you've got to understand, okay, who are going to be able to fill all these different kind of roles to help the ship move forward. And so it's going to be less about, for me, making burgers, and more about building the team to going forward with it. So that is understanding the foundational part of who you are as your leader, what vision you have, and how you're going to drive that forward is understanding then who your team is.
Jeff or Sherry, would you like to add anything?
I thought that was really interesting about your kind of self-diagnosis of what you're, you know, Sherry is a meticulous organizer and an empathizer, and then I'm more of a bulldozer. So so between the two of us, it seems to work out pretty good. And as far as the people in general, it never stops. You know, I wouldn't say we have built a team. We're constantly trying to build a better team. And we've been blessed with having a lot of longtime employees stay with us. And then they've grown into bigger roles that have helped us do better. But we never stop really looking for new people at all levels. So I think that's just an evolution that's just not going to stop.
We'll move on to the next one. Start with Jeff. Here he is. Oh, Jeff, I'm sorry. You didn't take that. Yeah, add to that, Jeff.
I was thinking about the whole time, too. 2 points. First, I'm going to be the third person up here to mention DISC. That's pretty interesting, really, to me. That speaks a lot. If you don't know what that is, take the time to look that up. Our executive team has gone through a lot of what we refer to as marriage counseling, and we needed it. And our DISC profile as an executive team looks like a shotgun blast. It is all over the chart. And that's what you want. It makes it hard. Because as Bradley alluded to, and Chris alluded to, and Jeff as well, you know, I run the day-to-day operations with another individual for Servpro, and we could not be more different than anybody I've ever met in my life. We do not see eye to eye, and that works for us, and we've figured out how to utilize each other's skill sets to offset the other one. And the second point, and Bradley alluded to it, is just find your good people. And if you recognize somebody as a good person that you trust, put them on the bus. And I can't tell you how many times we have done that. We have not had the position. We don't know what your job is going to be, but I like you. And I can tell that you are a good person and a hard worker. Get on the bus and let's figure this out together. And sometimes it's weird and it's awkward, but it works. 8 times out of 10, it works. And so you find the right people, get a hold of them, and get them on your team. You'll figure out where they need to be.
Start with Chris on this one. How did you maintain the quality of your products or services while scaling, especially with an increase in demand?
Well, that is actually, you know, that's probably one of the hardest parts of it is that, you know, when I scale, I always say that your quality and your standards rise and lower with your staffing levels. So if I grew, for example, I grew double within 5 years, well, I had to take my next step of the leaders, and then I got promoted to the next step, which is great, but are the people who are taking their position to their level? Wasn't quite like that. So we had to always continue to reevaluate, especially during that very vulnerable time, heading down to quarterly meetings with some of those new people so that they see your face, that you can have one-on-one conversations, and you can have honest conversations of saying, okay, where can I help you expand? Yes, you got this new position, and it's exciting, but I don't expect you to know the world. I don't expect you to know what to do next. And so that when you come to that next step with that, you've got to be able to be more available to those people at a different level than you would be on the operations floor before.
Bradley, how about for you?
Yeah, I mean, spot on. That's what we do. We slow it down. You have to. Being able to break down into smaller metrics, being able to, so for us, what we do once a month, the third Thursday of every month, we shut down the office. And that's just the one time that I can get my entire staff in the same room. And we talk about those little things that we're diving into and where are our pain points and where can we progress and what do we need to tweak. So I think being able to slow down in those moments where you're expecting a lot of big changes, I think makes the biggest difference.
Jeff True?
Culture, 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 culture. When we decided to really get into expansion, we sat down in a room as an executive team, an ownership team, and we drew out around the room on whiteboard paper, you know, where do we want to be in 5 years? What does it look like in 5 years? What does it smell like? What does it taste like? Is it brick and mortar? Is it glass and metal? You know, what are the obstacles to get to where we want to be in 5 years? Who are the people that are going to get us where we're going to be in 5 years? What do we want the spouse of an employee to feel about their significant other working at our company in 5 years? Everything you can imagine on a wall. And then when we got done, we went back to the first slide and the vision statement wrote itself. We just circled like words, pride, opportunity, and the vision statement wrote itself. We wrote down our vision statement for the past 4 years, laser focused on it. And if we pump it all day long to our employees, it's part of our culture. Does that fit our vision statement? And does it fit in our values? And so just that constant push on culture.
Jeff and Sherry.
Okay, we're not as big probably as the other people on the stage today. We have 2 restaurants and a brewery. In total, we have about 200 staff members. The headquarters is Jeff, me, and 2 other folks. So we're real small in some ways. And I am a control freak. So I am in the restaurants all the time. And maybe that's why we haven't grown faster, because how much can one person do? So that's really something to consider. I love being involved with the food. That's, for me, that's the core of it, beyond the people. It starts with the people. Then we have to sell a quality product. So I'm very tight with the control about the quality of the food product, what we buy, how we make it, how we serve it, right down with the condiment that goes on the plate. So we're really hands-on as far as day-to-day operations still, and ensuring that the restaurants are run the way we want them to be run every day, and that people are being taken care of the way we want. But again, we haven't been able to expand that out to, you know, multiple units. So
basically, the control freak's going to have to light up a little bit. And then the bank's going to loan us some more money.
And then
we're going to find a good spot.
5 years, we'll be back. Anyway.
It is really neat to get different perspectives from different size businesses. And we'll move on to the next question. I'll also start with Bradley here. Can you share an example of a mistake or a misstep that you made during the scaling process and how you or your company overcame it?
The good part of what I do is I do get the pleasure of working with a bunch of small businesses, and I did have a gentleman who approached me earlier a couple months ago, and a small business owner kind of struggling to take that next step. And I think the biggest takeaway that I took away from that conversation is something I would tell you guys is be okay to get out of your own way. He was very adamant about this was the obvious next step in his business. And I said, why? He said, well, that's what I'm supposed to do. And I said, why? There's no obvious next step in every business. I think you gravitate in certain directions. My broker thought I was silly when I went to him and said I wanted to start an HOA division. Who wants to take on that headache? But the obvious for me was there was nobody in our market that was doing it. There was not a local partner that was doing it. And obviously, HOAs have such a negative mindset, and we just wanted to do it different. We wanted to love on people, take care of people, and we just wanted to approach it a different way. And you can do that if you approach it the right way. So I think that would be the biggest thing that I would say just from a miscue is being able to see small businesses, just being able to say it's okay to gravitate in the direction that you didn't originally think you'd go, and just kind of be able to slow down and be able to hear yourself and be able to understand that there are ways of growing outside of the scope of what you thought maybe you originally thought you would.
Jeff Church, we'll go to you next.
Well, that's a tough one. I was thinking about it. I mean, we've done so many things wrong. But I tell you, with growth and with scaling, you know, we started with one small location in Clarksville. And so one of the things we did not do very well at all was adapt our policies and adapt our procedures as we grew. You know, we still wanted it to be that very small one location feel, but when you have seven locations, you can't do that. You can't have this person over here on this commission plan, this person over here on this other commission plan. You got to start to consolidate those things. And we should have done that a lot quicker. We have not adjusted our policies quick enough, and now we're having to go back and do so. And it's very tough to do right now at this point, you know, at the size we're at.
We'll just work our way down the line. You, Chris.
I love the vision statement, the culture. One thing with our culture is we wanted to make a family. So we call ourselves Mackey Family McDonald's, but when you're dealing with that family, you also have to be able to cut the emotions out and run it as a business. So I would sometimes either let a problem go a little too far to hoping that that person that I know that could be a leader would fix it on themselves and address it, but it would let it go a little too far where it started affecting other things. And on the flip side, I would probably focus my attention on the negatives a little too much. A good quote that I heard is, don't spend 95% of your time on 5% of the issues. Focus also what's going well, and that can elevate your mindset to the next level. So you're always gonna make mistakes, no matter what. It is kind of scaling business. It's three steps forward, one step back. Sometimes it's three steps back and then a leap forward. But always having that mindset of, okay, here's our vision, here's our goal. Are we working each day today to take that next step? And then you're human. It's okay if you make mistakes. Just learn from it and move forward.
Jeff?
Okay, well, obviously we've made many mistakes. In our business, the substantial decision is like choosing where to put a restaurant. And we have two now, as Sherry said, but over the years we've opened some other ones that were duds. And in reality, we should admit it's a dud. We back up and then kind of regroup and then go back out and try it again, essentially, which gets back to that kind of bulldozer part of things and not getting down when something doesn't work. You just gotta have a certain amount of relentless, kind of a relentless attitude towards continuing to push forward in the long run. But I'm not saying, you know, if you've made a mistake, the first step is to admit you've made a mistake. And if it be a big one or a small one, you just, you know, okay, I screwed that up. Now I gotta back up and either fix it or move on, kind of chop it off, and, you know, put it aside and move on. That's kind of.
Yeah. We'll just work our way back too, so if either one of you want to add on the next question. We know, obviously, technology and automation is speeding up faster than probably ever. What role has technology or automation played in scaling your operations, and how did you choose the right tools for your business?
Well, with us, the primary technology is the point-of-sale system that, you know, that is kind of the brain of the restaurant operation, you know, with getting an order in, getting into the kitchen, going to the different stations in the kitchen where everybody has to do produce the product, go to the bar. It's kind of amazing what happens when you place an order in a restaurant now. And then, you know, technology continues to evolve. You know, like right now what we're moving towards trying to have some ability to do tap to pay type stuff. You know, and it's a little thing in some respects, but on the other hand, and you see it in a lot of places now, but in a sit-down restaurant, in our part of the country in particular, it's a little bit different. You don't see it much, but that's just another one of those things that will speed up the process just a little bit. And so we try to stay on the, I can't say we're going to get on the leading edge of it, but we at least try to stay up with what's going on in the industry with technology.
I think technology, that they're just saying, I think we're living through a technology revolution right now that we look back on the history books, because heck, back when I was a kid, I remember dial-up internet that you still had to get on there just to do anything, and nowadays you can get anything from the click of your hand, click of your phone. And so as that continues to evolve, now AI is coming. So well, what are you doing to prepare for that? And that's not my kind of expertise, but do you have someone in mind that does have passion for that? And then realizing that a technology leader in your business is probably something that you're going to have to invest in, something that you have to look in, because once you are behind in technology, you're three steps behind, because that's how rapid that bell curve is coming up. So having a technology lead, having someone that you have trust in that you could say, hey, this is what's going to help save seconds. Steps are seconds, as we say in our business. And every step you can save is a second that you can build on.
And I was going to ask just to bounce off that, but as a company the size of McDonald's, you guys seem like you're kind of at the forefront of maybe the fast food industry when it comes to technology. If you go to McDonald's right now, the things, the drinks fill themselves, you know, like what do you think's on the horizon as far as...
Well, I know, so when it comes to McDonald's, there is there's a department. That's the one nice thing about being a franchisee is that they tell me what to do, and they say if you don't do it, I'm kicking you out. But the big thing is going to be your mobile app. That's what McDonald's has doubled down in, is because that is a cost-efficient thing. So if you have an app for any of your kind of businesses that you can drive people through, they're going to do their own self-orders on the mobile app. Everything's going to be customized the way they like it, and we know that we can't screw that up on the mobile app. And that's where kind of our values are going to go into the future. Same thing with automation. Our drink machines now kind of do themselves. Self-serve kiosks. And where it's really interesting going forward, there's a certain generation who think you're taking jobs, and I'm not going to work with that. And that generation, until that, I say is I can't fill those jobs. And then there's another generation that says I don't really want to go up and talk to someone from counter. And I don't want to talk to anyone. I'd rather just come right here. It's funny, in the last 10 years when it comes to McDonald's and that technology side, because people are now growing up on the internet rather than the face-to-face conversations. That it went from being the place that was hardest to staff was the grill, to now flipping the place that's hardest to staff is the front counter, because they don't want to talk to people. And so that technology, if you can continue to go forward on that and you can make that as easy as possible, it's going to help your crew going forward too.
Mr. Tripp?
It's interesting you brought up the franchise system. You know, we're also a franchise system. And so we can't even keep up. It's unreal just what's being pushed down and changing in technology. And so one of the things that we've tried really hard to do, refer to ourselves as the bad news bears sometimes because the franchise is upset with us every now and then, but it's because we're trying to really pick and choose what technology we're embracing, because what we figured out the first couple of years in scale is that we were trying to use too much too quickly and changing things too often. And also, we've tried to be very intentional with keeping the people aspect in it, because technology is in a move to take the people aspect out of everything that we do day to day. You know, we put a camera in a room now for a water loss. It scans the room. It uploads, you know, that scan. Somebody somewhere else for a computer creates an estimate. That estimate goes to the insurance company. All we've got now is a person walking in the room, placing the camera on the tripod. And so we've avoided that, even though that's the technology where our company's going, because we want our people to understand how to do a water loss, and understand how to do an estimate, and understand how it goes to the insurance company and what that adjuster's looking for. And so we've been selective with embracing technology, but it's coming.
Certainly. All right, Brandon, how about for you?
Yeah, same balancing act for us. I mean, we're a locally owned and operated company. So for a company that's coming up on 150 years of operation, for us, the balancing act has been how do you implement the technology but keep the relationship aspect, because for us everything we do is built on relationships, so we don't want to separate that. So when it comes to how do we deal with 600 different owners, all 600 owners have different perception of how they want that communication coming. So for us, you know, how do we implement, you know, cameras that we can set in the middle of a room and get my staff in and out a lot quicker? How can we do some different things like that to make the product a little bit better, but keep the relationships there? And that's definitely a struggle that I think a lot of small businesses are having, because there's so much technology that's being thrown at us. What do you use? What's beneficial? What can fit within your budget? And I think that's just something that we're all gonna have to figure out as we grow. But I would probably stress to everybody, make the relationships important, because I think that that's what's gonna allow you to scale your business is those around you, not necessarily the technology that takes people away from you.
And from the bank standpoint, I can just tell you, it's amazing how much technology the banks have, and we just keep going. There's new stuff and, you know, a lot of different things. So, Jeff, we'll go to you on this one. How do you balance taking calculated risks with staying true to your business's core values during growth?
I had a full head of hair like 3 years ago. That's interesting, because that, for me, is a little bit different. And a lot of that's personal risk. But our company and our banker will attest, we say yes, and then we go figure out how to do it. We've done that a lot. It has given us a lot of opportunities for growth. It can also be dangerous. It has to be done properly, and a lot of times it's been tough. But for us, risk is very important. I try to have a 24-year-old daughter. I try to explain risk to her and opportunity to her and how to weigh those things out. And so I think it's very important. I think that we're up here talking about scale, or we're talking about growth. It does not happen without risk and without, you know, having the capacity for risk. And so I think that you have to accept that. A lot of small business owners in the room, if you're not prepared to be risky, you're not prepared to go in debt, and you may want to think about another line of work, because that's what we do, and that's how you're going to grow.
We'll go to the end to Jeff and Sherry, if you all want to add.
Well, I think there's two types of growth, at least for us. There's the continued growth of the restaurants that we operate now, and then the brewing side of our equation, and we're always looking to continue to grow there, because as I said earlier, I think if we're not growing, we're probably headed the other direction really quickly. And then there's the step out and grow growth, like, you know, Jeff Troy was talking about, the you know, going to 7 franchisees or doubling franchises or doubling your number of franchises. You know, for us, you know, it would make logical sense for us to open a third restaurant. But honestly, Sherry and I talk about it sometimes, and we're kind of like, man, that's a lot of work, you know, and we're getting to the point in our lives where we're starting to think about, you know, 5 years from now, we'd kind of like to be doing a little bit less. So if we go and open a whole other restaurant, you know, we've strapped on a whole other job, you know, for probably a pretty good while. Either that, or we pass it off to our son, who's probably not ready for it. That'd be a whole different mistake. The internal growth with our existing business is we're dedicated to it 100%, but making that decision to go out and just open a whole nother one, that's a whole different animal.
Chris, how about you?
It's funny you say that, because my dad, he threw me in when I was 10 years old in McDonald's, very legally here in the state of Kentucky because of farm stations. But it's what you want to do. You got to focus on is where you are, especially in your career, because I had the conversation. I'm looking to buy 11 more McDonald's possibly in the future in the next 12 to 18 months. And Dad's like, I don't want anything to do with it. I'm ready to cut back. You want to go forward? And I said, yeah, well, that's where we had to sit down and we had to calculate the smart risk. Okay, if you were to take this debt on with my help pulling out, what is that going to leave you staff-wise? Where is that going to leave you with operations-wise? How are you going to be able to handle the influx of competition and flow? And that's where a calculated risk is very important for you want to have a vision 5 years down the road. I've been now calculating another piece of growth. I have people down in my chamber that I've been growing right now that I'm going to be ready to hopefully promote in the next 5 to 10 years. But that's the mindset from my size. But from a smaller side, it's going to be sitting down and just having realizing yourself of having a calculated risk of saying, yeah, the reward's great up here, but it's going to take years to get to that reward. Are you willing to put in that work, and do you have the team behind you to do it?
for you, Bradley?
Yeah, being 10 steps ahead. I mean, being able to be calculated in that. But I would also tell you guys, being in a season of stability is not always a negative thing. Being able to sit in the moment and be able to scale when the time is right. I think we're in an environment where if we don't think we're growing, we're going backwards, and that's not always the case. So being able to in a moment of stability and be able to calculate your risk and be able to grow appropriately, I think also makes a lot of sense when you're looking at scale.
I think it's safe to say everybody here like feels more comfortable operating in chaos, right?
Yeah.
It feels better. Yeah.
This is bringing us to our last question, and then we might have time for some questions from you all, I'm not sure, but what advice would you all up here give to a business owner, small or large, that's hesitant to scale due to fear of failure or losing control over their business? And I'll just start here and work our way to the end, Bradley.
Scared money don't make no money.
Yeah, that's my mind. Yeah, be okay with failing. I mean, I think that be okay with failing because you were prepared. I think that too many times we just dive into stuff head first because we think that's what we're supposed to do. Be calculated, you know, all the things that these folks up here said. Go into it with the right mindset. Go into it with a game plan. And if you fail because you were prepared, that's okay. But if you fail because you just dove into it and you expected things to work out, that's a completely different discussion. So that's what I would say, is just go into it with the mindset that you know you're prepared, you're 10 steps ahead, and you're ready to dive in. Then if you fail, regroup, try it again.
Jeff?
Just add to that, you are going to fail. You are going to make mistakes. You are going to fail. You know, learn from it. Get excited about it. So, I'll have to do that again. You know, figure that out. And so, just take advantage of it.
Chris?
I think it's that leap of faith. I mean, exactly what you were saying. You know, I've been fortunate enough to grow up where my mother and father started at 16, just crew people at McDonald's. And then watching Dad always having that next step going forward of saying, all right, I'm going to take this risk. This could affect our family this way. And if it does, I will work double as hard to get us back where we are. But just watching that American dream, watching that move forward, and it's just got a vision where you want to see yourself. And if that's the way you want to do it, and if it's so, like you said, the road's going to be bumpy. It's going to be roller coasters, hills and valleys. But keep pushing forward. Always have that grind mindset of not stopping.
And for the Robinsons?
I guess, you know, if you're going to grow, you do need your systems. You need to figure out what those systems are for your business. They're going to look different for each of us. Make sure that your team is ready to grow with you, or that you have other people that you have in place. I think Chris was saying he has people already that he's thinking about where they can be in 5 to 10 years. You know, can they be in charge of their own store? So he's growing those people in his company to be ready for his next period of growth. So all those things you have to think about and be organized about your growth, down to the smallest details of how you want things done. Because when you do grow, you do lose some of that daily control of the way things are run. So the more you can lay out for your team in black and white or color photos, the easier it is for all of them to understand what you expect and want.
I think another thing too is just surround yourself with good mentors. Don't surround yourself with a bunch of yes men. Everybody thinks when they're spending your money, it's a great idea. Surround yourself with people that'll be honest with you. Literally, there's times before that there were adventures that I've jumped up to. I've literally picked up the phone, called the gentleman next to me, and said, "Hey, tell me about this, because I just don't know enough about it." Be able to have people on your phone that you can do that with, because I think that matters a lot, because you don't always have to be the smartest person in the room. And I think that means that you're surrounding yourself with people that can help you grow.
That was all the questions that I was giving you. Bev, is there time for questions? Okay. I'll bring you the mic, and I'll try to do my best.
I did.
Okay.
Yeah. So let me start by saying I'm a big admirer of these companies that are represented here today. You are looking at what true entrepreneurs look like. So something that was a little bit referred to across the board, all of you, I believe, Jeff, you too, but the others for sure, either work with their family, for their family, or have family that work for them. I grew up in a family business. My husband did too. So there are unique challenges and great opportunities that come with that. But maybe you all would comment. I feel like there are other people in the room that want to be in business with their family.
That's interesting. For us, I got out of the Army here at Fort Campbell, and we opened a restaurant in downtown Clarksville basically because we needed a job. And then we're 33 years into it now. So we have three children, and all three of our children grew up in the business. They've all been hosts, they've all been servers, they've all been bartenders, they've all cooked chicken tenders, they've all plunged down a toilet, they've all taken out the trash, they've done it all. And then the two oldest children promptly went to law school. They come to the restaurant and eat. And then they turn around and leave and say, y'all might want to work on this or that. They're good at advice. But then the third one, he came along and he's like, hey, I want to stay in the business. So he is now what we refer to as our escape plan. But he's 27 years old and we're easing him into it. He wants to do it. He seems to enjoy it, and he has a good head for it. So hopefully, he will stay with it, and we'll continue to be a long-running family-owned business. That's what we'd like to see it do.
Chris,
working with your family is very beneficial. Very fun, but also very challenging. So now, the last 3 years, I've been the CEO of our company, and the hardest people to lead have been probably my parents, because they've had these systems in the past, these wonderful systems that have helped them move the business forward, but I don't think anyone my age knows how to properly use a fax machine, and my dad's still consistent on faxing out anything, information to the restaurants. So being able to have those sit-down conversations with mom and dad and say, okay, let's talk about how things are evolving going forward and how things are going to change the company and how you might have worked great back in the early 2000s, but let's talk about how going forward, what we think the vision is now. And the harder part is trying to lead your siblings. So I have a brother and a sister in the company, and taking that emotion out is another thing. But it's going to all just having to sit around, having a time that says, all right, we're going to put our company hats on, we're going to put our professional hats on, this is a family meeting, come to order, and changing the vibe and the mindset of saying, this is right now, it's all going to be about business, and then playing on people's strengths. I know my father has a very strong bucket here, my mother, my brother, my sister, we're able to elevate those and then be able to have those honest conversations or opportunities about moving the business forward. So it's a blessing to work for your family, but it's also one of the hardest things.
Jeff?
I work with a handful of my best friends now. And in the role I worked in before this one, don't hate me because I was in government, but I worked
with... You did a good job.
thank you. I worked with my best friend, and... he said, we sat down and talked about it, and he said, we cook a lot together, and he said, we always argue over when to light the charcoal, and we're not going to get to argue over when to light the charcoal. One of us has to be the boss. And so we had that conversation, and so just go into it and be open. Know that it's going to change your relationship, but also know that if it's going to be that much fun, because when you are successful, don't you want to have your family and friends with you? But just have the conversations along the way. Be real with each other. And they're not always fun conversations, but have the conversations and be open enough to have them. But it's worth it because you're going to want to have your family and friends with you along the way.
Every young man, I guess, grows up aspiring to work for his father-in-law. And she's back there. And it definitely makes family dinners a little different, and you don't really get to go home and gripe to your wife about your boss. I think it took me a long way. I'm very prideful. He asked me numerous times. The gentleman that was in my role previously was retiring, and he had asked me numerous times, like, hey, I want you to do this. And I think I told him no probably at least a handful of times. And I kindly just asked him, I said, are you asking me because I can do the job or because I'm your son-in-law? Because if it's the latter, I don't want it. And at the time, the business was definitely a lot more paper-driven, and I think he really wanted the technology mindset that I brought to the company. And I can honestly tell you, as somebody who stressed about it a lot at the beginning, I don't think I could have made a better decision. Very easy guy to work for, and I think the biggest thing for me, I've just kind of taken on the, it's their family's legacy, and it was an honor for him to kind of ask me to take it and take it to the next level. So I've enjoyed every second of it. Easy guy to work for, and he's kind of given me that trust. And despite what I do, I can honestly tell you, I don't know if we've ever had cross words, because I do genuinely think he trusts me with the day-to-day, which has made things a little bit easier.
Your wife has been an ear to you.
Well, I don't think anything bad because I've got some right home with her, so.
I'll add from the banker's side, I come from a fourth generation propane business, still in business today, and I grew up in a family business. I delivered propane bottles when I was 8 years old, filled propane tanks, and now on the other side of it, getting to loan money to small businesses and seeing, you know, their dreams come true, that was my purpose. You know, I don't know if I ever get involved with my dad, but the bank side is really cool because we get to see people like you all live your dreams out, and we're here to try to help you. So. Yvette, do I need to go to you?
Well,
we're going to do questions.
There's time for more questions.
Okay.
This is the time to ask.
They'll bring you a microphone, and just if you'll ask, I'll try to do my best to moderate.
Hey, so my question is to each of you, do either of you have like a board of advisors or somebody that's not family related, or and some could be family, but someone that you can go to besides the banker and the tax person that can kind of, when you have questions, say, hey, accountability, maybe you need to look at it this way. Is that, yeah.
Go ahead, Dave.
We hired somebody. I alluded to it earlier. We had marriage counselors, is what we call them. But really, that's, you know, a lot more than that. Not only did we do the DISC assessments, we learned how to communicate properly with each other, how to listen properly with each other, but we've also worked with them on our meeting cadence and our alignment and our titles and roles and responsibilities, especially at the executive level. And it's really, really, really helped us. I know we would not be where we were today if we did not do that properly, because we don't have it in us, but we hire people that do have those organizational skills. And the ability, meeting cadence is anything you've ever thought about before, but it's important, you know, to how often you're meeting, when, with whom, and how it's being traveled down. It's on one side of the pyramid, and then back up the other.
For in the back there.
At some point, all of you guys up there had an idea that turned into a concept, that turned into a plan. And at some point, you all had to take that jump to start. And that's kind of like where I'm at in my situation. You know, like you, sir, I spent the last 20 plus years in the military, going around the country, 20 combat zones. I could handle the pressure, I could handle anxiety. I could be on your bus, I'll fix the bus if it breaks down, take it out if it gets stuck. You know, and I'm fortunate enough to where, because of my retirement and my disability, I have this concept that's going to be a first of its kind in Clarksville with the potential to expand to multiple locations. And it's one of those $1 million ideas, but I don't have the capital, I don't have the savings. So if I was to go to the bank, they're probably going to laugh at me and tell me no, come back some other time. And besides just being an angel investor who wants to invest in this, all of you gentlemen are my target audience. You know, it's four older gentlemen, nothing wrong with the ladies, but it's an older gentleman. It's a sport that's a hobby that is very expensive. People pay the money to play it. And there's nothing here in Clarksville that can do it. The nearest competition is 53 miles away in Nashville. And I don't know you, but I hate driving to Nashville. So how do I turn this concept, this $1 million idea, and take that jump to get started if I don't have any capital, I don't have much of the savings, but I am willing to work at this and not take a paycheck, because I'm fortunate enough, like I said, retirement, and put all the money into this idea and make it work. I know that's a long-winded question, but that's all I have to
say. I would say, first of all, if you want to bring Shark Tank up next year, that would probably be a great idea. You got to surround yourself with the people that does have that vision. Your vision's got to be very clear. I know, and I'm going to talk with my parents' model of it, just like that. They had no money. They were crew people at 16. They were able to bring in not only family, but they were able to bring just some outside investors who were able to, on paper, realize how this is going to work. So if you have this idea and that you know what's happening 53 miles away, what research do you know on what it took to get that off the ground starting? What is it could be the action plan of a 10-year, 10-year financing on that, and then how you think that in the area, how that will contribute to a place like Nashville where it's the certain percentage of the population. So just having those questions prepped for and answered for, then bringing it to someone, because everyone has a great pipeline idea, but having the prep of, all right, here's my idea, and this is how it's going to work. I just need the foundation, the support for it. Give me your thoughts. And always asking that person, how is this going to fail? And then when they say, well, I'm scared it's going to fail because of X. Well, they go back and do the research and say, I can fix X. Next, how is it going to fail? And then it'll get to a point where you realize it's not going to fail. And that's when you can find the people that will help you drive that dream of yours to the next level.
For us, I think I mentioned a little bit earlier, the banks, hopefully, as the gentleman said before, are more respectful, but they literally, the first three or four banks we went to laughed when we said we wanted to open a restaurant in downtown Clarksville. Right? They couldn't help themselves. They just kind of burst out a little bit. And in the end, for us to get open, we literally got money from my great aunt, my grandmother, and some credit cards. We couldn't find anything else, and thankfully, it worked. And we were able to survive and then grow. And it was kind of ironic that, I'm sorry to say this, but as soon as you don't really need a lot of money, the banker is really there for you. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it becomes much easier. But, it's their business. They want you to be able to pay it back, and they don't want to take a huge risk. But in the end, I think a lot of times when a little business gets that first start, it really is like your family and friends, your relatives that have to kind of get you that first push and get you going. Because it's like you said, it's not like Shark Tank's not really here, And I don't know where you find an angel investor like that. We couldn't find one. So, but maybe they're out there, and I hope you find one.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I can just talk to you offline.
Okay. I was trying to add the number of employees that each one of you have. It sounds like about 1,000 employees represented with the four different businesses. I think, Chris, you said you had about 800. And we all know that people, employees, are very important to be successful. And as a small business, can't always afford to have a huge HR department or someone who is experienced. So how do you handle that? How do you attract the right people? You're able to retain the right people? And how do you ensure that they're being taken care of?
I think it goes back to understanding your leadership and the people you do get in your circle on that bus, per se, is use that DISC model, realize what their strengths are. And for example, HR, it might not be someone you might ask them to take on that little next piece of role of responsibility to help you grow your business into the next level. And then they will not only get invested in the operations, but now they're invested in you, and this truly becomes a family business, or truly becomes that next step, because they're going to be able to bear two parts of the hats. It's just going to be fine building with what you have in the beginning and then being able to develop and going forward from that.
I think a big thing for us is not necessarily, we have probably 25 employees, and that's on the employee side. And then on the brokerage side, we have approximately 80 agents. Those are not necessarily employees, so it's a little different relationship. So I'm technically the HR guy. So as a small business, a lot of times you don't have a full-blown staff like you would from a corporate level, and that's where you got to rely on your other relationships. So Rosemary, you know, our local attorney that we rely on a lot for a lot of different questions. So being able to have relationships outside of your own building, a lot of times, you know, and we say this in the real estate world, just because it's on a contract doesn't make it legal. Well, it's the same thing with HR and anything else that you do. Just because you say it and do it doesn't make it legal. So being able to have relationships that you can rely on, you know, picking up the phone and going, hey, this just doesn't make sense. What can I do here? Having those relationships outside yourself, especially when you are a small mom and pop, that makes a big difference when you're trying to run the business at a legal way that makes sure that you're doing right by everybody involved.
And tell the story, tell the success stories. As we answer your question, we have, I think, 225-ish employees. But like one of our general managers of a location started as a temporary worker. Another general manager of another location started just on a truck. And so we've got those success stories throughout our organization, and we tell those often. And so part of our mission statement is, are we providing opportunities to grow from within? And so if that's in your mission statement, if you have those stories to tell, that's good. But also check yourself. You know, we recently just went to all the locations and said, okay, let's grade ourselves. Are we, in fact, providing opportunities for you to grow? And if not, what do we need to do so? And so I just think that I think it's important to just be transparent throughout that process.
Over here on the left.
I would love to hear maybe from a couple of you a time where you guys felt like you had to go backwards to go forwards. You know, maybe cut a little bit of the net income to make a new key hire, or just some adversity or whatever that you had to go through.
Sure. I'll start that off. So when I became an operator in 2018, I had to move into location. I was used to be, okay, I was a supervisor. Well, I walked into two restaurants that are poorly underperforming. And I had to actually step back into a previous role that I had to do there. It was one of the hardest times of my life, because I walked in one Saturday after trying to hold people to a standard that they never had to, and I had 12 people walk out on me as soon as I walked into the restaurant. And I thought, I screwed up. I don't know how I'm gonna be able to power through this. But being able to work through those times, so I went from working 40 hours to about 60, 70 hours for about 18 months. But I knew once I got that foundation, my culture built into these two struggling restaurants, that it was going to take it to the next level. So sometimes it is, if you're going to be an owner, it's not a 9-to-5. It's not something that's going to be linear the whole time. You're going to have your great times. It's like, oh man, this is great. And then life hits you like a Mack truck. And another thing when I grew again is that some of my people who've been with us a long time, they weren't ready to grow with me. And I had to make a hard decision of saying, I appreciate you what you've done in the past, but you are now contradicting what our growth was because they didn't like the changes we've made. And when that happened, I had to take back on some very strong roles and responsibilities that increased my hours again until I found and developed that next person. So you're going to have those really tough times. But pushing forward, always having your vision going ready, and then just like you said, that person that you said, we don't know what you're going to do with right now, but having that bus of people, that's what is going to be able to help you move to the next level.
You know, sometimes your adversity, it goes and finds two underperforming stores, and you have to turn around, and he's 100% correct, that is the leader of a small organization, your personal time just goes away sometimes. It all just gets devoted to the business. In 1999, a tornado hit downtown Clarksville. We were just kind of in a groove and thought our life was pretty good, and it just got wiped out one day, and the one of the worst phone calls you'll make is to ServPro, because you're calling because you've got a big damn mess, and they want a fire. a few years ago we had a fire, exactly, and then so when that hits you, I guess your personal resilience is the one thing that you have to be able to rely on, and then go back to the family and friends. Anybody here in the insurance business? Your insurance agent, your local guy, is your buddy or person, you know. But their parent company may not, you know, the ones you end up paying your money to, you have a fire or a tornado or whatnot, they may not really be there for you the way you might expect. So your overcoming the obstacle gets even bigger. So,
and I'll say, if you really want to grow, once you begin scaling, put your ego aside. Go find your replacement. And it's hard to tell, you know, hard to look for your replacement to replace you in your company. But if you're not trying every single day, you're not going to grow. And so I think that's important.
Do we have time?
Have mine,
over.
By the way.
I have two questions about that. My first question is, how do you learn how to interview people, like an actual interview? I'm 23. I don't have that.
YouTube.
Oh.
YouTube is the perfect library. So when I ever got to have anything like this, like before I got on this panel right here, I YouTubed probably 20 minutes last night of saying how to properly engage AK crowd on panel. So if you want, it's literally the new free library. And so get on there, five key tips on how to have an interview and keeping it professional and getting your point across and how to take emotions out of it. It is hard. You want everyone to succeed in that interview and everything, but learn from other people's strengths and mistakes. So YouTube it.
ChatGPT.
Yeah.
That's what I love too.
I mean, even if you don't use all the questions, at least get you in the right mindset. So be able to go in there and be very specific. Ask it very specific things. Cue it with very specific things. You'll be surprised when it throws back at you.
Make I did not want.
Sorry. Make a list of the things you want to ask. They're right. Do some research. Find out. There are things you can and can't ask legally. You need to know that. And then make your list. And then be comfortable with a pause and an interview. And they come. And they're awkward sometimes. But don't rush to fill that space. I've found over the years that in that space, oftentimes, it gets filled with information from the applicant, and it becomes valuable information. And I learned more about that person than I thought I would know just from my questions. So.
I obviously did not watch videos last night. I should have. But what they said, but also take the time to get to know them. This is your opportunity, as I alluded to earlier, trust and getting the right people on board with us. Hopefully they're doing the same thing. They're watching videos, they're using ChatGPT. And so you're going to have to get to know the person as well, so don't forget that.
Okay. And then my next question is actually for you. Is that your marriage
counselor?
At what point did you hire that person, and how did you find them?
When I went across the table after somebody. Yeah, really. But I had the good fortune to have worked with this same company in two roles before. And so I knew the value. And when we began our expansion, we had problems communicating as an executive team. And so we knew we needed some help. And so it should be glaringly obvious when you are not communicating properly with your executive team or with your other owners or anything like that. If it doesn't feel good, if you're not having fun, we say in our entire group, if you're not doing what you're good at and what you enjoy doing 80% of the time, then let's fix it. And so you should know that. And we recognized it because we were having problems communicating and getting where we needed to get to.
This is a board full of entrepreneurs. And entrepreneurs, by definition, are risk takers. And I've learned that over the years. I live with one, and then I go to the bank in my very conservative square box and try to make everything fit. But there are things that keep even entrepreneurs up at night, besides the acts of God that we discussed earlier, which we can't worry about. What is the number one thing that you worry about that keeps you up at night?
Chris, you want to kick us off?
In my restaurants, I always say that I can live with a customer coming back to me that says, my food was wrong. I don't like it, but I can live with it. I can live with the times being very long. I don't like it, I want to fix it, but I can live with it. But the day that I make a child sick, because we're not executing food safety at the highest level is the day that I pull out of the game. And there's been many franchises, like, for example, Jack in the Box. McDonald's had an E. coli breakout in Colorado because one of our suppliers was not properly following the standards on that kind of stuff. So those out of control minds and being able to trust the people that do the day in the day things out right to make sure that we're serving safe quality food probably keeps me up at night, but that's just where we have to reinforce those systems and routines that it's getting done right. So making sure that at the end of the day we're safe and we can give the best service that we possibly can.
I think for me it's probably the reality that it's bigger than me. There's a lot of people and families that work for me that depend on me to make the right decision. And, you know, there's a business that's 147 years old that depends on me to make the right decisions. And if I don't make the right decisions, it can affect a lot of people. And I think that that's something that I've had to realize and that I can't take lightly because it's important to me to make sure that that business is something that is around for my kids to enjoy.
I think that's a great question, and I think it's going to be different too for everybody in your organization a lot of times. And we alluded earlier to finding the right cocktail of people to put together to run your organization, whatever that looks like. For me, it's a lot different than the person I said was a lot different than me that I run the organization with. You know, for me personally, it's people and it's relationships, and it's as Brad alluded to, you know, there's families that are depending on you, and sometimes that doesn't work out, and that's unfortunate. And so, that the relationships, the emotional side of things, you know, that's what keeps me up at night. It's not the finance and the risk, and you know, it's the other right, banks handle that. And the other guy that runs the company with me, that is what he worries about. He does not worry about emotions and people, and so that's why we all fit each other well. He worries about the numbers.
I think that's. Jeff and I kind of split along those lines. I worry about the people. I worry about the 200 families that depend on the pub to make a living. When you're an entrepreneur and you own your own business, it never leaves you. And it's impossible, I think, to explain. It's a little bit like motherhood or fatherhood, I think. You know, you have a child, you never forget about your child. You're always wanting to make sure that your child is safe and okay and healthy and happy and has all the things that child needs to succeed in life. My children tell me that I have 200 children, you know? So I constantly worry, are we taking care of everything to make a good place for them to work, a good environment for them, safe, successful, because for us to pay their salaries, the business has to keep going. And it's a big payroll. It's a big number when I look at it. It kind of takes me back a little bit. And sometimes when I walk in our brewery and our poet, it takes me back, or it shocks me at times. I'm like, how did we get here? It's big, it's just.
You said you wanted to brew more beer?
I did, and I look at it, it's just, and thanks to Planters, we were able to brew more beer. When we started, you know, banks really didn't want to give us a lot of money, and I don't blame them. We didn't have any money. We didn't have a lot of equity even in our house to mortgage the house. So, and then Jeff worries about the financials a whole lot every day. But I worry about the people from the perspective of, you know, are we taking care of business for them? And then also, you know, to address the food issue, because that's a huge issue when you're serving food. You never, ever want to serve food that is not just right. You don't want to ever make anybody sick. I tell people all the time, thanks for coming. How was your food today? And they say, oh, it was great. And I'm like, that's wonderful. Thank you. If it's ever not great, tell us. I mean, even if we just cooked your burger wrong, tell us. I want to fix that. But I never, ever want to make anybody sick. You know, and some of our product comes into us, like, we had these frozen corn dogs. And we serve them as a kid meal, and it comes from a packaging company, processing company, you know, hundreds of miles away. And it's just our habit to cut into one to make sure it's cooked all the way through when we bring it out of the fryer. And our kitchen manager noticed when he cut into one that it looked funny. And the product was bad. But it's inside the little corn dog, like the hot dog itself from the packaging plant. So you're just constantly on alert for all the things that can go wrong. And you're trying to catch them.
Yvette?
We don't have any more time. I'm sorry.
Okay. Well, I just want to thank all of them for their time. They're obviously very busy people. Thank you all.